Hello, everyone. This episode will cover Serge Weber, neurofibromatosis, and tuberous sclerosis. I'll let the host introduce herself. At the end of this episode, she has a bit of dedicated advice that I think you might find helpful. Please enjoy.
Hey, future doctors. Thanks for tuning in to Spoonful of Sugar, a podcast made for medical students, by medical students, and to help the medicine go down. My name is Patrice Wien. I'm a third-year med student at Drexel University, and I'll be your host today. Did you guys know that some neurological disorders have unique cutaneous manifestations and are thus called neurocutaneous syndromes? On today's episode, we will go over the three of the five most common neurocutaneous syndromes: Sturge-Weber, neurofibromatosis, and tuberous sclerosis. The other two are von Hippel-Lindau, which is associated with renal cell carcinoma, and ataxia telangiectasia, which is associated with immunodeficiency. We'll start with Sturge-Weber syndrome, which is also called encephalotrigeminal angiomatosis, but that's a mouthful, so let's just stick to Sturge-Weber. Sturge-Weber is a congenital, non-inherited gain of function in the GNAC gene. This is different than what we'll discuss, tuberous sclerosis, which is an autosomal dominant. Sturge-Weber is also a somatic mosaic mutation. So let's break down the meaning of a gain of function and a somatic mosaicism. Gain of function means that it increases its function of that gene. Thus, it converts a proto-oncogene to oncogenes and it's disease-causing. Somatic mutation is a mutation of somatic cells, and it's not in every cell type. Some cells may have the normal protein, while other cells may have the mutated gene. Compare this to germline mosaicism, which is a mutation in gametes. So this might be a trick question, but does anybody know what the protein GNAC encodes? Right, it encodes a protein that is part of the G protein complex, where its mutation leads to abnormal neural crest derivatives, leading to capillary malformations. What manifestations do you think can arise when there are capillary malformations? Some examples are angiomas and strokes. The nice thing about Sturge-Weber and most of the neurocutaneous disorders that we'll learn today is they have a nice acronym that helps you remember all the characteristics, making sure that you get all of those points for step one. So we'll start with Sturge-Weber, and the acronym is STURGE, S-S-T-U-R-G-E. So we'll start with the first S, sporadic, meaning non-inherited. Remember, it's a congenital non-inherited gain of function in the GNAC gene. The second S is port wine stain, emphasis on stain. Port wine is just a description of the color. It's a reddish pink color, and the medical terminology is nevus flammis, and it is unilateral, and it goes in a cranial nerve V1 and V2 distribution. It spares the maxillary distribution, so it mostly stays close to the forehead, the bridge of the nose, and on the cheekbone. Tracking calcifications. Sturge-Weber is known to have leptomeningeal angiomas. Leptomeningeal are angiomas of the arachnoid and pia mater. That's what leptomeningeal means. And then these cause calcifications that appear on MRI or CT scan. Tram tracking just basically means a parallel distribution. U is for unilateral. Again, the port wine stain is on one side. R is for recurrent strokes or seizures. These can cause hemianopia or hemiparesis. And a question for you guys is, do you know which areas in the optic pathway can cause hemianopia when damaged? These can be optic tract, lateral geniculate body, or optic radiolations, and they cause bilateral hemianopia. That's an important note in the neuro section on step one, so a nice little point for you guys. And then G is for glaucoma or GNAC gene. How you get glaucoma is Sturge-Weber causes episcleral angiomas. So angiomas basically on top of the sclera, it increases the intraocular pressure leading to glaucoma. And then the last one, E, is for epilepsy, again, recurrent seizures. So what is the treatment for this? Usually it's asymptomatic. If you have a patient who comes in with Sturge-Weber and they're complaining of glaucoma, do you guys know what medication can usually be given? Good. Prostaglandins like bimetoprost or a beta blocker such as timolol. So last question for you guys. Can you recite the acronym to yourself, first saying the word and then what each letter stands for? I'll give you a hint, the acronym is STURGE. Moving on to our next neurocutaneous disorder, which is tuberous sclerosis. Tuberous sclerosis is an autosomal dominant or spontaneous mutation of the tumor suppressor genes TSC gene 1 and TSC gene 2. Mutation in these leads to a loss of function, uncontrolled cell growth leading to tumors. Can you guys contrast this to the pathophys of Sturge-Weber that we just learned? Nice. Sturge-Weber is a gain-of-function mutation. Remember, it converts a proto-oncogene into an oncogene, causing cells to increase in number. And then tuberous sclerosis is a loss-of-function mutation in the tumor suppressor that keeps the cell cycle in check. So loss of the cell cycle means that uncontrolled cell growth. So the two genes encode for two proteins. We'll discuss them each separately. TSC1 is on chromosome 9 and encodes for Hamartin. Hamartin is a protein to maintain cell growth, and TSC2 is on chromosome 16, which encodes for the tuberin protein, which works with the Hamartin protein to maintain cell growth. So they kind of work hand in hand. So tuberous sclerosis is nice because it also has an acronym like Sturge-Weber, and the acronym is hamartomas, and that's spelled hamartomass. And the double A and the double S are just because there's two different associations for those. So we'll go through each letter and I'll give a description of each one. So starting with the H, which is kind of easy, is hamartomas. So that's why hamartomas is the acronym, and that's the first letter of the acronym, or the first word of the acronym. So hamartomas are benign masses composed of mature cells native to that tissue of origin, but just an abnormal organization. So it will look like normal tissue under the slide. It will just be growing all over the place and randomly, no organization. The next letter is A for angiofibromas, and if you break down the word, it will kind of help you understand it. Angio meaning blood, fibromas meaning a mass of cells. So it's a benign tumor made up of blood vessels and connective tissue. And then M is for mind. It has intellectual disability. The first A is for renal angiomyolipoma. Again, so if you break down angiomyolipoma, you can kind of better understand it. It's a benign renal tumor cell composed of angio, blood vessels, myo, smooth muscle cells, and lipoma, fat cells. And then the other A is astrocytomas, which are gliomas of astrocytes. And then R is for rhabdomyoma, which are benign tumors of striated muscles. T is for tumor suppressor genes TSC1 and TSC2. O is for autosomal dominant, so it doesn't start with the word, but just remember autosomal dominant. M is for mitral regurgitation. A is for ash leaf spots, which are white macules on the trunk and extremities. And I really encourage you to look at a picture of these because they kind of look different than cafe au lait spots, which are seen in other diseases. And then S is for seizures. And then the last S is for Sjögren patches. And then again, I encourage you to look these up. They're flesh-colored papules in the lumbosacral region, and they have like that orange peel appearance. So the treatment for tuberous sclerosis is similar to Sturge-Weber. You treat symptomatically. So if a patient comes in with tuberous sclerosis and is experiencing seizures, do you guys know what type of medication can be prescribed? One type can be valproate. Can you guys now recite the acronym to yourself for saying the word and then what each letter stands for? I'll give you a hint. The acronym is hamartomas. Okay, so now moving on to our last neurocutaneous disorder, we'll talk about neurofibromatosis type 1 and neurofibromatosis type 2, so NF1, NF2. So we'll start with NF1, which is also called von Recklinghausen syndrome. It is an autosomal dominant mutation in the tumor suppressor gene NF1, and this mutation leads to a loss of function of the RAS single transduction pathway. So the gene encodes for the neurofibrin protein, which is located on chromosome 17. This protein prevents cell overgrowth by turning off the RAS protein. The RAS protein is important for regulating the cell cycle and progression. So when that is mutated, the cell can just go crazy and just continuously replicate. So something interesting that this presents in adolescence, comparing this to NF2, which we'll discuss later, that presents between the ages of 18 and 24. NF1 leads to multiple neurofibromas. So again, trying to break down the words and understanding what neurofibroma means. They're peripheral nerve sheath tumors that originate from neural crest cells. So they affect myelination of the nerves. So some manifestations of the disease that you can see kind of arise in various parts of the body. You have cutaneous, you have ocular, bone. It's also associated with some tumors, so we'll go through these now. Okay, some cutaneous manifestations are Caffé Lait spots. These are normally seen before 2 years of age. They are brown hyperpigmentation. Do you guys know where else you can see these spots? Right, McEwen-Albright syndrome. And do you guys know what McEwen-Albright syndrome is? It's a defect in a protein that leads to weakened bones that break easily and also these Caffé Lait spots. You can also see manifestations in the eye, so ocular, which are Lynch nodules. This means just a pigmented iris. And then you could also see the disease in the bones, so it presents with scoliosis, short stature, or sphenoid wing dysplasia, so that's of the sphenoid bone. And then has some tumor associations. So some tumor associations that it is with is pheochromocytoma and nephroblastoma and glioma. So do you guys know what pheochromocytoma is? Right. Pheochromocytoma are tumors of the adrenal medulla. Can you guys figure out what nephroblastoma are? There are tumors of the kidney and then gliomas. Tumors of glial cells in the brain. Okay, so last thing for NF1 is to go over the acronym, which is also really nice for us and help us gain those points on test day. So the acronym is CAFE SPOTS, CAFE SPOTS. And again, this should help you remember it because CAFE Lait spots is a manifestation that you see cutaneously. So we'll go through it. C is for CAFE Lait spots, that makes sense. A is for axillary freckling. F is for neurofibromas, E is for eye nodules, S is for skeletal abnormalities, P is for high blood pressure, O and T are for optic tumor, and S is for short stature. So CAFE spots. So think about it and try to go through the acronym again, but you saying it in your head. Okay, and now on to the home stretch of NF2. NF2 is a spontaneous mutation in the NF2 gene that encodes for the Merlin protein on chromosome 22. So 22 and NF2, that's kind of easy to remember. And as I mentioned, the age of onset is between ages 18 and 24, so a little older compared to NF1. Characteristics with NF2 are you'll find bilateral vestibular schwannoma, and these are acoustic neuromas. So if you have acoustic neuromas, what nerve do you think would be impacted? Right, the vestibular cochlear nerve, because it runs right in that area. So if you damage the vestibular cochlear nerve, what symptoms do you guys think a patient would have? They would usually present with tinnitus, hearing loss, and vertigo. Some other characteristics of NF2 are early onset cataracts, and NF2 is also associated with some tumors as well, but these are cerebral and spinal cord tumors. So the two tumors are meningiomas, which are tumors originating in the meninges, and then epididymomas, which are glial cell tumors that are commonly arise in the lining cells of the ventricular system. Okay, and that's it for all of the new information on today's episode. We'll do a little review, but if you don't want to review, thank you all for listening. But starting off with Sturge Weber, remember that it is a congenital non-inherited gain of function in the GNAC gene. The acronym used to remember it is Sturge, S for sporadic, S for port wine stain, T for tram tracking calcifications, U for unilateral, R for recurrent strokes or seizures, G for glaucoma or GNAC gene, E for epilepsy. And then we moved into tuberous sclerosis, which was an autosomal dominant or spontaneous mutation of the tumor suppressor genes 1 and 2. And the acronym that we used for that was hamartomas, H for hamartoma, A for angiofibromas, M for MIND, A for renal angiomyolipoma, A for astrocytomas, R for rhabdomyoma, T for tumor suppressor genes TSC1 and TSC2, O for autosomal dominant, this one's kind of funky, M for mitral regurge, A for Ashley spots, S for seizures, and Sjögren patches. And then we discussed neurofibromatosis type 1 and 2. So NF1 was an autosomal dominant mutation in the tumor suppressor gene TF1. And remember, that's on chromosome 17. And that has multiple manifestations. You have cutaneous, ocular, bone, tumor associations, and then the acronym for that, for NF1, is CAFE spots. C for CAFE lay spots. A for axillary freckling. F for neurofibromas. E for eye nodules. S for skeletal abnormalities. P for high blood pressure. O and T is for optic tumor. And S is short stature. And then NF2 is a spontaneous mutation in the NF2 gene that encodes for the Marilyn protein on chromosome 22. And that didn't have an acronym to go with it, but just know that it's associated with early onset cataracts and has meningiomas and ependymiomas. And then I just want to give some advice maybe for those studying for step one or preparing for studying, because I know it can be daunting. I was always told how brutal studying was and how horrible my life would be. So I went into dedicated period scared to be absolutely miserable. The more I studied, though, I found myself loving dedicated, actually. I would wake up around 6 a.m. and work out from 6 to 7:15. I would start studying from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. With about 40 minutes for lunch. And that doesn't mean I was laser focused the entire day. When I thought I was losing focus, I would go for a short little walk. And then after 7 p.m., I didn't do any studying and I just relaxed on the couch with my husband or maybe went to get some ice cream and just really chilled for the evening. I think what set me up well during dedicated was putting in the time and work during second year. So I took my step one at the end of second year. When I then, when dedicated came around, I didn't need to go back and relearn all old material. I knew most of the material covered because I kept up with my Anki cards. Granted, keeping up with your Anki is challenging in itself, but it paid off by the time my dedicated period came around, because I had more time to relax. I was able to take off a day and a half or so on the weekends and do fun activities, or honestly just vegetate on the couch watching the Taylor Swift's Eras Tour movie. My best advice for you is to not listen to all the negative advice that is thrown your way during medical school. Dedicated period was the highlight of my medical school career so far. And I really enjoyed my time. So go in with it with an open mind and be prepared to work hard, but also have like those little breaks that you probably don't have during the school year. So it actually was a pretty relaxing time for me. So I wish everybody the best studying. Thank you for listening. I hope you found this episode helpful. Please subscribe to our podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, visit our website at spoonfulofsugar.org and post them under the link for this episode. Good luck again studying, and remember that if you have an SOS moment while studying, Spoonful of Sugar is always here to help the medicine go down. Bye, guys.